Welcome back to J-Talk Extra Time, your regular look at the goings-on in J2 and sometimes J3 as well, the second and third tiers in Japanese football. Apologies for the absence last week. Pesky real life got in the way as usual. I'm Jonathan Steele, by the way, as you know, and I'm joined as usual by Stuart Smith, my regular companion on these jaunts into the J-League. Stuart, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Don. I'm in a bit of rude health this week and looking forward to talking some J2 and J3 with you. And so, yeah, let's get into it.
Excellent. You had a mini sports festival of your own over the weekend, I believe, Stuart. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I did. So on Sunday, we'll get onto my day out at the football in Gifu for Gifu against Yokohama. But on Monday, so yesterday, as we're recording this on Tuesday, I was at the Norrvia Stadium for Scotland against Samoa in the Rugby World Cup. So a 34-0 win for Scotland. Had a few drinks, sang a few songs. It was a good night had by all, except the Samoans who sat in front of us. But hey, you can't please everyone, can you?
Excellent. Well, we will try to please as many listeners as possible on the pod, Simone or otherwise. But yeah, good to hear that you enjoyed yourself, Stuart. I know you had a tough week at work last week, so it's good to see some photos of you on social media letting off some steam, and now you're back and ready to go. We should take a look at the top of J2 then. Seems like a logical place to start. Kashiwa Reysol are still up there. 69 points now, 34 rounds played, so they're 9 points clear of the team in second place, which is now Omiya Ardija. And we'll talk about these the top two together, Stuart, because they both recorded 3-0 home wins over the weekend. Kashi were a bit too strong for Tokyo Verde, winning 3-0. They also won at home against Ehime last week, so two straight wins for them, kind of stopping their wobbles that we've discussed on recent podcast. Olunga scored 2 goals in the first half, moving him on to 16 for the season. So Kashiwa were 2-0 up at the break. And then Cristiano scored with about 10 minutes left to wrap things up. It could have been worse for Verdi. Their former Kashiwa defender, Naoya Kondo, managed to hit his own crossbar at 2-0, but luckily the ball stayed out. Verdi had a couple of penalty shouts, which weren't given, and also a goal correctly disallowed for offside. But I don't think they were really at the races in this one. It was a pretty comfortable win for Kashiwa, all things being considered. Verdi sort of remaining safe mid-table obscurity in 13th. And for Omiya, they beat Nagasaki 3-0 at the NAC 5. That moved them up to second place over the weekend. And again, Omiya's 2 home wins in a row. They beat Tokyo Verde in the last round. So it's all about Tokyo Verde for some reason at the moment. It was a great goal from Kanji Okunuki. Meant that Omiya went in at half-time 1-0 up. It was a really well-taken goal, if you get a chance to check the highlights. And then things really got moving in the second half when Kakuda brought down Komoto. Omiya won a penalty. Robin Simovic was just off the bench and took it, but it was well saved by the Nagasaki goalkeeper, Tommy Sauer. He pushed it onto the post, but just the kind of luck you sometimes have when you're away against a very good side. The rebound went straight back to Simovic, and he snaffled it up and made it 2-0. Daisuke Watabe then added a deflected third goal to put a bow on the result for Omiya. There was a lot of injury time in this game, Stuart, because there were some handbags that clashed between Hiroto Goya and Akinari Kawazura, but it didn't really lead to anything other than a sort of, wasn't it quite a 22-man brawl? I think there was about 8 players involved at maximum. But yeah, that means Nagasaki now are quite some way off the pace, 11th in the table and 7 points off the playoff places. So for me, they're pretty much out of playoff contention now. It might be a bit simplistic to put these two games together, Stuart, but for me, you know, it just seemed like two kind of automatic promotion chasing teams beating up on kind of mediocre mid-table sides at this stage of the season. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case for Kashiwa. I think they were just far too strong. You look at the forward line that they put out in this game. They had Olunga and Eseka up top, and they had Matheus Savio and Cristiano playing on the wings behind them. And I think they were just they were just too good. They were too dynamic for Verdi. I'm not really sure what Verdi have to play for now. Like, I think when these teams come up against teams that are kind of playing for a higher goal, I think teams like Verdi and Nagasaki are going to be kind of on the end of some defeats. I would say I think Omiya were I think they were good value for the win, but the second and third goals were pretty lucky. I think the penalty save from Tomizawa hit the post and went directly back to Simovic. I mean, that's just, as a goalkeeper, you just throw your hands up and think, oh, what more do I have to do? And like you said, Watabe, it was a really good run, but his shot was really badly deflected over the goalkeeper again. And so they were quite lucky to run out 3-0 winners, I think. But it's not, the result was never in doubt, because I don't think really Nagasaki gave anything going forward. And I think the most fight they did put in was the aforementioned kind of brawl at the end. I'm not sure how it started. I think Goya got a bit nonplussed with the defender kind of just sitting on top of him after a tackle, pretty much handbags. I can't remember whether you said routine wins, but I think that's what they were. I think Kashiwa are looking promotion ready already, and I think Omiya slowly have kind of just, they haven't kind of excelled their way to second place, but they're there. And yeah, it's going to be a close run-in, because we're going to talk about the other sides in automatic promotion contention probably right about now, I would say.
Yeah, excellent segue. I'll pick up the baton there. So, I think Kashiwa are definitely the more spectacular side, and Omiya sort of quietly sneaking into that second place at the moment. It'll be interesting to see how long they can hold on to that spot, I would suggest, because we can talk about the teams directly below them. In third place, Yokohama FC, they're one of three teams who refuse to be separated on 58 points, Stuart, the others being Yamagata in fourth and Kyoto in fifth. So we'll talk about Yamagata and Kyoto in a moment, but Yokohama FC, yeah, third place, 58 points. They drew 1-1 away at the bottom side, FC Gifu, on Sunday. And I want to get your thoughts on the latest at Gifu a little bit later. But for Yokohama, that's 16 games unbeaten. Very impressive run. But they haven't won in the last three games. Three straight draws, slightly less impressive. Very big crowd at Nagoyagawa for this game. 11,700 plus, very impressive stuff. But there was an ominous start, I think, for Gifu, Stuart. Iba gave Yokohama a very early lead in about the 10th minute, typical kind of opportunist poacher's goal. And Leandro Dominguez also hit the Gifu crossbar with a pretty direct strike before the break. So it looked like Yokohama FC were probably going to hold on and take all 3 points. But Gifu were much improved in the second half, as we talked about a little bit before recording. Calvin Yongapin had to clear a header off the line to preserve Yokohama's lead. And then right at the death, about a minute left, the very impressive forward Michel grabbed Gifu's deserved equaliser when he latched onto Kento Okai's header and then kind of bent the ball around the goalkeeper Minami. I thought the ending of this game was pretty controversial as well, with the Gifu had a corner, just getting ready to take it, and the chance of getting the win, and the referee blew for full time. I assume there just wasn't enough injury time left over to take the corner. But yeah, finish 1-1. What did you make of Yokohama FC specifically, Stuart, from this game?
Well, I think in the first half they were very impressive. They took the lead after 10 minutes, like you said. I think Iba just, I mean, he's so good. It's really difficult to defend because, like, he's so big and strong, and he just rolled Kentaro Kai. He just let the ball roll across his body, ushered Kai out the way and just planted a left foot shot past Jan Olajivas in goal. I think you said it well there as well. I think Leandro Dominguez smacked the crossbar from a good 25 yards out. Koki Saito looked really, really dangerous whenever he got the ball. In the first half, they thoroughly dominated. They should have been more than 1-0 up. It wouldn't have been a stretch to see them 3 or 4 goals up at halftime. They were so good and they were so dominant. In the second half, Gifu, we'll come into Gifu a little bit better, but just from the Yokohama point of view, they did have chances in the second half. I think Daisuke Matsui flashed the ball over. I think Leandro Dominguez hit the stanchion, like the bit that holds up the goal net behind the goal. There were, if I was to say one thing, and I know this probably doesn't come across as kind of a good thing to say, but I think Yokohama thought they had that game won at halftime, and I think maybe they came out in the second half thinking, oh, it's just going to be the same as the first half. Now, maybe they dropped their game, maybe Gifu raised their game, but Yokohama did not play as well in the second half. And they, not to pat ourselves on the back, but remember a couple of weeks ago when we said, if you stop Yokohama at source, and their source is the base of the midfield, you can kind of get in and about them. Well, Gifu did that. They put Kensei Nakashima, who's a forward slash attacking midfielder, but they planted him on the in the first half they played two up front, but in the second half Nakashima dropped a little bit deeper, and it really stifled Yokohama's kind of patient build up, and I think that turned the game. And I think, yeah, like we said a couple of weeks ago, once you kind of force them into doing things a bit quicker and you don't give them the time to build up, then, yeah, you can kind of blunt some of their attacking edge. And I genuinely think at halftime, I think they thought the game was won. I'm sure, and I was the same. I thought there's no way Gifford were going to get back into this game. But they did, and in the end, they deserved a point. And that's going to look like a pretty horrendous 2 points dropped come the season's end, I think. I mean, if that's what stops them from finishing second, I mean, they don't have anyone to blame but themselves, but that's going to look like a pretty horrendous result, I would say.
Well, I think it could bite them a little bit earlier than the end of the season, because obviously they're 16 games unbeaten now, but they're hosting Kashiwa at Mitsuzawa at the weekend. So I'm not sure if they'll make it to 17 games unbeaten. And considering how tight it is in the top six, you know, a bad result could lead to you dropping out of the playoff zone altogether, couldn't it, at the moment? We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, we'll talk more about Gifu in a moment, Stuart. So just keep your powder dry for now. I want to mention the rest of the top six and how they got on over the weekend. Yamagata slipped down to fourth and still level on points with Yokohama FC in third. But Yamagata lost 1-0 at home to Kofu. Shohei Otsuki, who's been the main man up front for Yamagata recently, probably should have put them 1-0 up, but missed a good chance to do so. And then Kofu hit Yamagata with a sucker punch right at the death. Hidetaka Kanazono finishing off a great team move, albeit with some awful defending rolled in, and handed Kofu all 3 points in the third minute of stoppage time in the second half. And that was the first win in 4 games for Kofu, but it was enough to move them right to the brink the playoff positions. They now sit seventh, and they're just 3 points behind sixth place Mito. Kofu level on points with Tokushima and Okayama in eighth and ninth place, but we'll talk about them a little bit later. For Yamagata, it was the first defeat in 8 games, but possibly a very damaging one. Kyoto Sanga moved up slightly to fifth, again on 58 points with Yokohama and Yamagata. Kyoto won 1-0 away at struggling Kagoshima in this round. Kagoshima's Brazilian forward Lucao forced a good early save from Nobuhiro Kato in their Kyoto goal. But then in the 17th minute, Kagoshima's J2 debutant goalkeeper Tetsu Yamaoka made a bit of a mess of a header from Kazunari Ichimi. That became his 14th goal of the season. And Kyoto kind of held on to that 1-0 scoreline and won the game pretty comfortably. That leaves Kagoshima in deep trouble, third bottom, just 2 points clear of the relegation zone. But we'll talk more about the bottom of the table later. And then, yeah, I think the big losers in the top six over the weekend, Stuart, were Mito Hollyhock. They went down 3-0 away at Niigata, the big swan. That leaves Mito in sixth place on 57 points, so one behind the triumvirate of Yokohama, Yamagata and Kyoto. It also leaves Kofu, Tokushima and Okayama breathing down their necks in 7th, 8th and 9th respectively. Bit of a strange game though, this one. It didn't really feel like a 3-0 game. Niigata went in front with a beautiful chipped finish from Silvino. That was in the 4th minute and my personal favourite goal of the weekend. But for the rest of the match, it was pretty much all Mito pressure. Until Niigata won a penalty in the 3rd minute of second half stoppage time, which was converted by Leonardo. And almost incredibly, there was still time for Leonardo to score again in the 95th minute with a header to move him on to 20 goals for the season and condemn Mito to a pretty disappointing defeat. Niigata are in 12th place, 46 points, and they seem to be improving week by week. But I don't think they're too far off the playoffs to break into the top six this season for sure. What do you think about these teams, Stuart? Yamagata, Kofu, Kyoto, Mito. Anything that you noticed over the weekend?
Yeah, well, I think I'm glad you flagged the Kato save up for Kyoto Sangyu, because I think that was a game decided by the goalkeepers. I think that save was outstanding, given it was within the first minute, I think. So I think it was probably Kato's first touch of the ball, like clawed a header out from almost over the goal line. It's a really fantastic save. And then up at the other end, yeah, you hate to see goalkeepers at fault for goals, but unfortunately Yamaoka was. And yeah, it's those kind of fine margins that it's one of the reasons that Kagoshima are down near the bottom. And it's one of the reasons Kyoto are near the top, because they, you know, they make their own luck and they, you know, they went to a place that it's not super difficult to go to, but other teams have come and stuck down there and they ground out a win. And they're back in a little bit of a groove now. I think that was a bad game all around, which probably deserve to finish 0-0, because both teams were, considering how good they've been, that was a pretty bad game. I mean, I don't think either team deserved to win it, but full credit to Kofu, because they did, and they had no... Dudu didn't play, and Peter Utoka came off midway during the second half, and for them to come out and ultimately come away with a win at a difficult place to go, it says a lot about what Kofu are still capable of. I think you mentioned it quite rightly there. I think Mito were the big losers, both kind of literally and figuratively, because, you know, those two goals could cost them, really, because now they've got a worse goal difference than Kofu. And it's so tight up there now that any kind of big goal difference swing could have major ramifications going forward. And I think, you know, they just needed to, after that second goal went in, they just needed to shut up shop. There was no way they were going to get back into the game. Maybe a little bit of kind of a cooler head, or some of the more established professionals should have said, all right, enough is enough. Let's just shut this down. I think, you know, it's kind of difficult, because of course they want to get back into the game, but you know, you've got to think about the big picture as well. And I think they, if you start conceding like those kind of 3-0s, and if you start conceding those kind of score lines, it's going to be a problem for you going forward, I think. So yeah, I agree. Mito, the big losers. I would put Sanga down as the big winners, because obviously they're Yokohama didn't win, Yamagata didn't win, and Mito didn't win, so Kyoto did. And you know, it's not often that happened. It's like all the other playoff teams lost, but only one won. So Kyoto must be very happy this weekend.
I agree with you, and I think, as you mentioned, for Kyoto, who've been kind of in and out of form over the last month or possibly more, that was a bit of a banana skin for them, wasn't it? I think to win that game and to win it with a clean sheet as well, I think they'll be ecstatic. Okay, we just talk about two other teams who are on the fringes of the playoff places, Stuart. My personal line in the sand is drawn at ninth place. That's where I think that's as far down as I think we could get a playoff challenger from at this point. So we mentioned Kofu in seventh now on 54 points. Two other teams level with them, albeit with an inferior goal difference. There's Tokushima in eighth and Okayama in ninth. Tokushima had a pretty good win this weekend, beating Kanazawa 2-0 at home. A well-taken Naoki Nomura goal put them on the way in the first half in this match, and then in the second half, Watai earned a penalty, and Jordi, by perhaps not the most convincing penalty you've ever seen, but the keeper couldn't keep it out. It was 2-0, and that sealed the win. He's a big guy, isn't he? I think if I bumped into him, I'd probably tell him it was a great penalty, but he's not here, so there we go. And yeah, that win means Kanazawa are now in 10th. They're 7 points off the playoffs. And as I mentioned, I think that's too much ground for them to make up for this season, at least, unfortunately. For Okayama, they had a pretty uninspiring, I think, by their standards, 0-0 draw at home against Jeff United. That dropped them down a little bit to ninth place. But as I mentioned, again, level on points with Kofu and Tokushima. Kenji Sekido hit the crossbar with Okayama's best chance in this game. There was also a flashy overhead kick from Hayato Nakama, who continues to play out of his skin this season, but it was straight at Jeff's goalkeeper, Yuya Sato. I think Okayama will be disappointed they didn't win, but they're 5 unbeaten now, so that's something for them to be positive about. Jeff stay down in 17th place, 36 points for them. I think another win or a couple of draws would mean they don't have to worry about relegation anymore, so they're all pretty much safe. I was also curious, Stuart, I don't know if you know about this, but I figured I hadn't seen Jeff involved in a 0-0 game for a long time, so I just went back to check, and this was the first goalless draw involving Jeff for 16 matches. The last time they drew 0-0 was away at Tochigi back in round 17, So there you go. What did you make of these games with Tokushima and Okayama?
Do you ever play Mario Kart?
Is everything all right at home?
I'm not having a turn here. Go with me on this. Do you ever play Mario Kart?
Yes, of course.
Right, you know when,
6-year-old man.
Right, you know when you're in last position, and you get all the good boxes, like you get the lightning or you get those three kind of red shells.
Blue shell, yeah.
That's Jeff United. They're just playing around, not really being able to influence much off their own back, but they're just kind of out to spoil kind of other teams, right? So in the last three games, they're unbeaten, and they've beaten Mito, and they drew with Tokushima, and they've drawn with Okayama this weekend. And it seems like they're just going about just trying to wreck other people's, other teams' kind of hopes, just because they're not good enough to do it for themselves. And so that's what they remind me of. Remind me of the people who go around last place in Super Mario Kart.
It's a hotter take than I expected. I'll be honest with you.
You see, I was just keeping that in reserve. Just, you know, broadening my my pop culture references, although it's a bit old.
It's appreciated.
There you go.
No, it's topical because that there's a new Mario Kart.
Yeah,
game,
there is. Not, yeah.
Smartphones launched this week, so you're on. You know, you're fine. Carry on.
Thank you very much. it was a bad result for Okayama, though. I think they would have looked at this game and said, "Look, we need to take care of our own business against Jeff." Although, having said that, and Ichimori made a couple of really good saves, to keep it at 0-0. And so, from the highlights that I saw, it didn't seem an undeserved result for Jeff. You know, and like I said, Okayama will have looked at that and said, "Yeah, we should have been winning this game, but they didn't." But they're still in the hunt for the playoffs. I mean, what are they? 3 points off the playoff places still. And Tokushima, yeah, a kind of fairly standard home win. I mean, it could have been. I mean, if the result had gone the opposite way, we might well be talking about the end of Tokushima's season. And I think that's always the suspicion with Tokushima. Like, they're only one bad result away from completely torpedoing their own season. But as it is, last week they drew at Jeff, if I'm remembering rightly. And
yes, I think that's right.
But they're currently, what are they, 7 games unbeaten? Is that right now? And they've got Tochigi next week. They've got an interesting October coming up, though, because they've got Tochigi next week, and then the 3 following games are Okayama, Omiya, and Mito. So they've got it in their own hands. I mean, if they win, I don't know, 3 out of the next 4 games, that's not a bad haul to be taking into the final month of November. And so, I think they've got every chance of kind of like gate crashing the playoff party. But they just need to keep this run going now. That's what they need. They need to kind of put their foot on the gas next week against Tochigi, please. Tokushima, if you're listening. And then they have to take care of business against Okayama, Omiya, and Mito. And so, but you know, they're in good form now, so it's now or never for Tokushima, you would think.
Yes, I think that's true. I think there might just be a mental hangover from last season where they came very close and then they kind of blew it, which has been a sort of feature of Ricardo Rodriguez's time in charge. They've often looked absolutely fantastic and been a great side to watch, but they've just lacked, no pun intended, a little bit of steel almost or game management. It's something you mentioned when you were talking about Mito earlier, and I think it's valid, but I think it could apply to Tokushima as well. It's interesting. It will be interesting, as you say, to kind of sit back down 4 games from now and see how they've done in this run of big games that they've got coming up. Before we move on from the top 9, Stuart, the table is so congested. I mean, obviously we've got Kashiwa way out in front and are pretty much nailed on to be champions. But then there's only 3 points separating 6th to 2nd, and then 7th, 8th, and 9th only 3 points behind that. I mean, do we know any more than we did last time we recorded the podcast about how the rest of the top 8's going to look, or is it still too early? Even though we've got 8 games to go, it's too early to kind of make any great conclusions, do you think?
Well, I think we know less than we did from when we convened last time. I just think, it's just so difficult to call on a weekly basis. I mean, you know, and as we move into the final 2 months of the year, these teams will be playing each other. You already mentioned this week that Yokohama are hosting Kashiwa, but also Mito are hosting Omiya. as well this weekend. Yes. So I think the deeper you get into this kind of deeper into the season, the games that come along in October and November have so much more meaning on them between teams that are up and around the playoff zone. So I think it's difficult to call because so many teams still, in fact, all the teams have it all in their own hands, and it's just deciding who's gonna kind of accelerate through the gears in October and November, and it's kind of difficult to call. Like each team has their own strengths and each team has their own weaknesses, and on a weekly basis it's just kind of difficult to discern whose strengths outweigh the other team's weaknesses, really. And I think come back in a month would be or don't ask me for predictions would be the one I would say.
Yeah. So our podcast is basically a 1-hour audio version of that emoji of a woman shrugging.
Yeah.
Because we don't know.
Basically, yeah.
No, that's good. Well, look. How about this? We can guarantee it will be exciting, and a lot of these teams in the top eight will be trading places, sort of round by round, with the exception of Cashew, obviously. So don't go anywhere, guys. We'll be trying to make sense of it as much as we can as the rounds go on. Okay. Just a couple more games to mention then from the weekend's matches. Stuart, Yamaguchi beat Fukuoka 2-0 in a kind of, not exactly a derby, but two teams that just didn't have too, you know, Fukuoka didn't have too far to travel to get there. The Yamaguchi goalkeeper, Daisuke Yoshimitsu, saved Yang Donghyun's penalty just before half-time, so Fukuoka missed a great chance to head into the half-time interval in front. And then it's very symptomatic of Fukuoka's season as a whole. They conceded two goals in the last 9 minutes. Taisei Miyashiro scored his first professional goal. And then Georgi Ikegami dispatched a successful penalty, showed Yang how to do it, and that sealed the win. That leaves Yamaguchi, for my money, pretty safe and sound in 14th place, 39 points collected. Fukuoka still down in 18th. They got 35 points. I think they will be okay, but I'm not sure any Fukuoka fans can relax just yet. Still need a win or two, I think. Machida, Zelvia drew 0-0 at home with FC Riku at Nozita. This wasn't the easiest game on the eye, I think it's fair to say. I only really noted a brilliant volley from Machida's Yuki Okada, which hit the post and would have been a spectacular winner if it had gone in. That leaves Machida in 19th, 1 point behind Fukuoka. So, yeah, not quite safe just yet. Ryukyu, after that horrible run, looking okay to me, I think. 16th place now and 37 points. Did you have anything to mention about these games, Stuart?
No, not really. I think that... Ryukyu have done well, actually, to kind of stabilise the ship. I mean, they're in 16th position now. It's probably where a lot of people would have put them kind of at the start of the season, in and around this area. So they've managed to arrest this slide. I think the additions of Ono and Koya Kazama in particular have kind of given them, even though it was 0-0 at the weekend, but I think they've given them a bit more kind of nous and a bit more experience just to rely on. And I think for Renofer, I think that'll be the first goal of many for Taisei Miyashiro. He looks a really good player. I mean, I think they've got high hopes for him at Kawasaki as well. So I think he'll be a really good player going forward. I think it would be remiss of us not to mention the save from Cervantes that he made from Miyashiro's overhead volley. If you haven't seen it, I'll try and dig it out and I'll try and tweet it, because it, in a season of outstanding performance from Cervantes, that save was just phenomenal. Just point blank, but getting his hand up, palming it onto the post, what a sensational save. And then, yeah, 10 minutes later, his defence goes all AWOL and leaves Miyashiro with an open goal from 5 yards out. And it's, yes, Paul Cervantes, that's what I would say about that.
I feel like with Fukuoka's defence, AWOL would be like if they were in the right place.
Yeah.
Because whenever I watch highlights of their games, just nobody seems to be doing what they're supposed to be. And I think it's almost as if they just trust Cervantes to like take care of everything.
Mm.
It's like, we don't need to. You know, when everyone's got that person in their office who's like, oh, they'll take care of it. They'll fax the thing.
Yeah.
They'll do the photocopies. And I think Cervantes is that man. It's actually interesting. I was going to ask you about Niigata and if you thought they'd be like a potential playoff. Since we've given up making sense of this season, I thought we may as well just start talking about 2020. I was going to ask you if you thought Niigata would have a chance next year. But I think I kind of was fancying them and thinking they would. But of course, they'll lose Leonardo, won't they?
He'll
move on.
He'll go to Kashima.
And there goes most of their goals. And I think it's the same story with Fukuoka, isn't it? Because I'm sure Cervantes, like, his phone is just going to be ringing off the hook with clubs, probably not just in Japan, wanting to take him. And it's absolutely deserved. He's just been immense for Fukuoka this season. If it wasn't for him, I'm repeating myself here, but they'd be in a lot more trouble than they have been.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's sort of continue our downward trajectory then, Stuart, and we'll talk about the game between Ehime and Tochigi from the weekend. Ehime eventually winning 3-2, a result which keeps Tochigi second from bottom, but still 3 points ahead of Gifu. Gifu on 25 points now, Tochigi on 28. Ehime made a good start. Hiroto Tanaka sweeping in Takanori Maino's cross to make it 1-0. And I think for me, the turning point in this game happened shortly afterwards. Maino seemed to use his arm to block a goal-bound shot from a Tochigi player. No penalty was given, no red card was shown, and Ehime were able to go into half-time 1-0 up. I think that was a miss from the officials. As we mentioned, everything goes against you when you're down at the bottom. Sort of midway through the second half, a very sweetly struck free kick from Yuta Kamiya put Ehime 2-0 up. Probably the best goal of the weekend from a technical point of view, but I did like Silvino's for Niigata as well. So Ehime 2-0 up. We're going into the 89th minute and the game just went absolutely mad. Stuart, Ryosuke Hisadome managed to scramble home a loose ball to give Tochigi hope in the 89th minute, so it's 2-1. And then Ehime go down the other end. Kamiya goes clean through and round the goalkeeper for a tap-in, makes it 3-1. That's in the 91st minute. And there was still time for Kim Hyun to score for Tochigi with a very nice taken curling shot. That was the 94th minute. But Ehime grimly hung on and eventually won 3-2. Ehime now, they're in 15th place. They got 48 points. They're safe. Or it might be 38. I'm not sure, but let me check. 38 points. I'm sorry, yes, but they're pretty safe. It's their first win in 5 games. Now, we took a break last week, Stuart, and we didn't record, but Tochigi only went and won, beating Kagoshima 3-1. So it does keep things interesting at the bottom, but it's a shame that they weren't able to build on that against Ehime this weekend. So just to check on the bottom of the table, you've got Gifu bottom 25 points, but with a game in hand. Tochigi second bottom 28 points. Then Kagoshima 20th, third bottom. They also have a game in hand. They're on 30 points and slightly more comfortable. Yeah, Machida Zelvio 19, 34 points, and Fukuoka 18th on 35 points. Stuart, when we talked about Gifu and Yokohama, we leaned heavily on Yokohama. So tell us about Gifu, how they did at the weekend, and if you could, just broaden out your answer to include what you think of Tochigi and Kagoshima as well.
Okay, so like I said earlier, Gifu were terrible in the first half. They got completely outplayed, and Yokohama had 75% possession. could have been 3 or 4 goals up at half time. Like I said earlier as well, in the second half there were a few tactical switches. Kensei Nakashima worked very hard. They brought in Korean midfielder Ham Yong-jun to put some energy in the midfield. And we seem to finally see Michael, our Brazilian striker, who has waited long and hard for his chance and played really well. Showed Calvin Jongup in a clean pair of heels on more than one occasion. Got the injury time goal. We could have got another one, but I think... yeah, a point from that game. There's nearly 12,000 there, and I should say there were no free tickets given out for that game. Probably a combination of it was nice weather, it was Sunday, there was the potential for King Kazu to be there. Mashinsuke was on the bench as well, so a lot of people just came to see him, but they ended up seeing a really good game as well. And so, excuse me, if Gifu can play like the second half, they've got half a chance of staying up. If they play like the first half, they'll be relegated by the end of October. It's just that clear. The difference was so stark. Tochigi, I mean, the end of that game was just... you just have to see the highlights. It's crazy. I mean, Hisadomi, he doesn't just scramble that ball in. He whacks that ball in from like three yards out, and he just slams it in. It seemed like all his pent-up frustration just took it out on the ball. And then as they're chasing the game, yeah, Yuta Kamiya just puts the ball round the goalkeeper and runs round the other side, puts it in. And Tochigi still have time to get another goal back. It should be noted that Ehime keeper Okamoto was injured and just limping about the penalty area, not being able to really do a lot. But yeah, it's I suppose, looking at it objectively, it is a shame that Tochigi couldn't follow up. They would against Kagoshima with another positive performance. But yeah, I think I genuinely think it's the bottom three. Like I think even if Machida Zelvia didn't pick up another point during the season, I don't think anybody would overtake them, because I think the teams are playing so badly and they're so desperate now. I genuinely think it's 2 out of 3. It's one of only one of the bottom three are going to get out of this, and none of the other teams above them, whether it be Ryukyu, Jeff, Avispa, Machidan, they're not going to get dragged into it, I don't think. I think that they've all got too much. They've all got a lot more quality than the teams below them. The pivotal game is going to be Gifu against Kagoshima. That's both teams' game in hand, because it was postponed because of a typhoon. It's going to be the biggest game of the season. It could ultimately decide who stays in the league and who doesn't, and so that's coming up towards the end of October. So yeah, we'll see. I think Kagoshima in a worrying place, because then they're shipping goals. They've actually conceded more than Gifu now. I don't know if anybody else has picked up on that, but
Have you got like a sign, you know, like the Springfield nuclear power plant? It's like, how many days since an accident? You've got days since a team are conceded more goals than Gifu.
But it's Gifu tightened it up a little bit, but Kagoshima haven't, and they can't afford many more slip ups. But yeah, it's like we said, it's going to be exciting at the top. It's going to be, I don't know if exciting is the word at the bottom, but I think it's going to be tense, nervous, and highly strung, I think.
All right. Well, thanks for the insight. Talking of tense, nervous, and highly strung, maybe we should just cast a glance over the games coming up this weekend in round 35. I picked out a few games that I thought looked exciting, and they're all on Sunday, October the 6th. I think you mentioned some of these already. But yeah, Mito hosting Omiya, that's 6th against 2nd. Yokohama FC are hosting Kashiwa, that's 3rd against 1st. And also Kyoto, 5th place Kyoto, hosting Ehime. All those games at 2 p.m. And then you also made a good point when you said Jeff United are sort of party poopers at the moment. Well, they're hosting fourth place Yamagata, hot off the heels of that deflating home defeat against Kofu. That game's at 3 o'clock. It also sees, as I seem to say every other week, an ex-Jeff United manager, Takashi Kiyama, coming back to Fukuhari. So I think there's... I think the way that Jeff United have played this season, they wouldn't normally be in the sort of picks of the weekend fixtures, but just considering what they've been doing in the last couple of games and Yamagata needing a result, that could be an interesting one. Are there any games from that selection or elsewhere that you're interested in this weekend?
No, I like those picks. I think Yokohama versus Kashiwa has the potential to be game of the season. I think if all the attacking players bring their A game, I think it'll be an outstanding game. I think it'll be full Mitsuzawa. I think everybody will be watching it, and I think that, like I said, that has the potential to be the best game, not of the weekend, but of the year in J2.
So
0-0. So 0-0 written all over it, yeah. that's what I'm trying to do. But yeah, I think Mito and Omiya, I think if Omiya win this, I think Mito will have some serious problems. I think two defeats on the bounce at this stage of the year, while not fatal, is a very difficult thing to overcome. I think one game I would also watch on the Sunday is Tochigi versus Tokushima, because you've got, like I said earlier, Tokushima are very rarely more than one game away from just completely like nuking themselves. And this would be a game where in the past that I think they might struggle with. But if they're on their game, they'll beat Tochigi. But that's the point. Will they be on their game? And will Tochigi be smarting after their defeat in Ehime? Tochigi are running out of home games. They need to get as many points as they can. I think this will be a desperation game for both sides. So I think that'll be a good game to watch as well.
There you go. It's all happening this weekend. So hope everybody who... gets a chance to watch a game, enjoys it. Stuart, we're almost out of time for this week, so we're just going to check in a very perfunctory fashion with the third division, with J3. So, as we've mentioned a few times on the pod, it's kind of a battle for promotion between the top four teams at the moment. They all won their games last weekend, apart from Kumamoto. They drew 2-2 away at 12th placed Saneki, a result which meant Kumamoto slipped down to 4th place. Just looking ahead to the games coming up in J2 this weekend, it's round 25 in the third tier. It's a big game on Saturday, October the 5th. There's 1st placed Gunma host 3rd placed Fujieda. That game's at 2 p.m. So that's a very important game for both sides, I think, just looking at the standings. And then, on Sunday, Kita Kyushu in second, hosting Seretse Osaka's under-23 side, currently in 8th place. That's games at 2 p.m. And 4th place Kumamoto visit, and I'm trying to pronounce the inverted commas there, FC Tokyo's under-23 side, currently the bottom side, in 18th place. That game's also at 2 p.m. The reason I say visit in inverted commas is because the game's being played in Miyazaki Prefecture, which is pretty far from Tokyo. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with FC Tokyo's under-23s this month, but their home game this weekend is in Miyazaki, and then the next two home games are being played at the J Village, the kind of Japan Football Association's training center in Fukushima, recently reopened. Whether that's due to Rugby World Cup-related scheduling issues in the capital, which means that, for example, Tokyo Verdy are using Ajinomoto Nishigaoka. I don't know, because that's where FC Tokyo's under-23 has played a lot of home games this season. But anyway, if you're not based in Kanto and you want to see FC Tokyo's under-23s, you got a chance this month in Miyazaki.
That's a niche crowd, that, yeah.
It's a niche crowd, but we you know, this is a hipster podcast.
Most definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything you want to mention that hasn't come up? J2, J3, or JFL, or just general. Any other business? We should probably mention we're recording Wednesday night, and I just watched Urawa pull off an incredible 2-0 win against the Guangzhou Evergrande in the semi-final in the Asian Champions League. The first leg, two absolutely brilliant goals from Fabrizio and Takehiro Sekine. So well done to Urawa.
Last week, what happened to Urawa? Do you remember?
No. You have to refresh.
Well, they were beaten by Honda FC, were they not, in the Emperor's Cup? Was that last week?
Was that two weeks ago? Yes, that's correct.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think that's last week. Yeah. Honda FC taught them how to deal with the pressure.
Yeah.
Urawa are a funny team because I don't know how often you check in with J1, Stuart, on the regular, but for me this season it's not been very much. But I checked a couple of weeks ago and Urawa were in like the relegation playoff place. Like third bottom, and I think they're 13th at the moment, but hardly what you'd expect from a club of that stature, if you like. But yeah, it was interesting. I was watching the game tonight and they're kind of, for my money, they're kind of the underdog when they play against a team like Guangzhou. So I was rooting for Urawa and they did a great job. So whether it's just the fact that they can only get motivated for the ACL now, I don't know what it is. But they're giving themselves a great chance of getting to the final. And I think they'd be the first side to win the Asian Champions League 3 times if they won it. So... yeah, that'd be good for them. Oh, finally, since you mentioned Honda FC, I read on Twitter that a third division side has got to the Korean FA Cup final.
Yes.
That's Daejeon Coral.
Yes, I saw that as well.
Well, I don't know. I don't have any details. It's not my beat, but well done to all involved.
Well, I know they're going to be playing, was it Suwon Blue Wings, I think, in the final. They're a K1 side, or they were in the Champions League this year, I think. What was it?
I believe. They're a classic powerhouse, aren't they? I guess. So, incredible, and Honda FC's performance. As you're right to call it out from last week was pretty astonishing. I think pretty much everything in J2 and J3 last game was eclipsed by Shimizu winning 6-0 away at Shonan.
Yes.
In J1 as well. I'm trying to think how many other random leagues or matches we can
fit in at this point. Yeah.
Okay. Probably means it's time to call it a night. Stuart, if people want to catch up with you on Twitter, find out which Rugby World Cup stadium you're at, where can they access your content?
They can access my content and photos at sushi_football. How about yourself?
Yeah, at J2 Kanto Bites is always the place to go. Not as regular as I would like, but I do tweet when I can. So yeah, please check out and give us a follow. And when we record podcasts, we post them. We'll always tweet that out as well. So that's where you can get the podcast information first. If you like what we're doing here, but also what Ben and the guys are doing over on Big Pod, Daddy Pod, then please consider visiting the JTalk Podcast's Patreon page. If you just Google JTalk Podcast Patreon, we really appreciate any subscriptions that we get, any donations. We use that money to kind of fund new projects and make sure we have enough clothes to wear so we can go outside in the daytime. So thanks.
Yeah, we should just point out that there was a Patreon only podcast last week about ground hopping with Stuart and Chris, not me, Stuart, a different Stuart, an altogether better Stuart, I should add, Stuart Woodward and Chris Hoff. they travel around Japan a lot. Chris obviously does his Lost in Football in Japan, but Stuart Woodward is a fully paid up member of the Yokohama F. Marinos traveling supporters group. And they had a really, really kind of interesting podcast about traveling around Japan watching football. It's part travelogue, part kind of hints and advice, and part kind of travel stories. So yeah, hopefully we'll get some more Patreon only content in the future. But it's, yeah, like you just said there, if people are that way inclined, we would really appreciate the support. And yeah, it would be we like doing this, and we want to be able to give people more of what they want. And so if you can, just consider supporting us on Patreon.
Brilliant. Couldn't have put it better myself, Stuart. Thanks for that. Okay, well, we're gonna head off, return to our families, and find out what they've been up to while we've been talking about football for the last 2 hours. And yeah, hopefully we'll be back together next week, Stuart, to record another show, real life permitting. But for now, everyone, thanks for listening, and enjoy the J League this weekend. We'll speak to you again soon. Okay, bye for now.